Srila Prabhupada ki. Like, I'll start off by reading Srila Prabhupada's preface. It's quite interesting that Prabhupada wrote the preface on the Vishwarup Mahotsav day. Do you remember what is the significance of Vishwarup Mahotsav? Srila Prabhupada took sannyas on that day. The Prabhupada wrote the preface on the day he took sannyas. And that day, I mean, that is his sannyas anniversary day. And the Prabhupada gives a very, very clear but quite succinct understanding of nectar devotion, nectar instruction. Do all of you have a copy of this book? Okay, doesn't matter. Yeah, get the book. Yeah.
We were not really informed that today was the first day until this morning.
Oh. That's why, many of you are not prepared.
Yeah, there's some people that aren't here because they're not aware.
Oh.
So it's not completely informed. There's a couple of people missing.
I see.
That weren't around to get be told.
Very well, not sure that I was coming.
I don't know exactly what day it started.
Actually, it was supposed to start on the 5th, but I informed him that I would come on the 5th evening and start on the 6th. And anyway, so we are here, and the Krishna consciousness movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. The Gauriya Vaishnavas, or Bengali Vaishnavas, are mostly followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of whom the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are direct disciples. Therefore, Sri Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Rupo Raghu Natho Pade Hoive Akuti Kabe Hamo Bujha Goshe Jugalopiviti. When I am eager to understand the literature given by the Goswamis, then I shall be able to understand the transcendental loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to bestow upon human society the benediction of the science of Krishna. The most exalted of all the activities of Lord Krishna are his pastimes of conjugal love with the gopis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the mood of Srimati Radharani, the best of the gopis. Therefore, to understand the mission of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and follow in his footsteps, one must very seriously follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. Sri Rupa, Sanatan, Bhakta Raghunath, Sri Jiva, Gopal Bhakta, and Das Raghunath. Sri Rupa Goswami was the leader of all the Goswamis, and to guide our activities, he gave us this Upadeshamrita, the nectar of instruction, to follow. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left behind him the 8 verses known as Shikshashtaka, Rupa Goswami gave us Upadeshamrita so that we may become pure Vaishnavas. In all spiritual affairs, one's first duty is to control his mind and senses. Unless one controls his mind and senses, one cannot make any advancement in spiritual life. Everyone within this material world is engrossed in the mode of passion and ignorance. One must promote himself to the platform of goodness, sattva gun, by following the instructions of Rupa Goswami. And then everything concerning how to make further progress will be revealed. Advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the activities of the followers. A follower of the Krishna consciousness movement should become a perfect Goswami. Vaishnavas are generally known as Goswamis. In Vrindavan, this is the title by which the director of each temple is known. One who wants to become a perfect devotee of Krishna must become a Goswami. Go means senses, and Swami means the master. Unless one controls his senses and mind, one cannot become a Goswami. To achieve the highest success in life by becoming a Goswami and then a pure devotee of the Lord, one must follow the instructions known as Upadeshamrita, which has been given by Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami has given many other books, such as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vidagdha Madhav, and Lalita Madhav. But Upadeshamrita constitutes the first instructions for neophyte devotees. One should follow these instructions very strictly. Then it will be easier to make one's life successful. Hare Krishna. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, September 20th, 1975. Vishwarup Mahasab, Krishna Balaram Mandir, Raman Reti, Vrindavan, India. So, oh, Radha Govinda, you didn't introduce yourself. I'm sorry, I just noticed you.
My name is Radha Govinda.
You're just hiding. So, now, we can consider one thing, although Srila Prabhupada is saying here, that the nectar of devotion, Rupa Goswami wrote the nectar of devotion, nectar of instruction for the neophytes. But Prabhupada is also saying that one becomes to achieve the highest success in life by becoming Goswami and then a pure devotee of the Lord. So one must follow the instructions known as Upadeshamrita. Upadesh means, how many of you know Sanskrit? Okay. Anyway, Upadesh, the word Upadesh means instructions, advice. The literal translation would be advice. And Amrita, I'm sure everyone knows that. So the nectar of instructions. And these instructions are coming from Srila Rupa Goswami. Who is Srila Rupa Goswami? Rupa Goswami is one of the most intimate associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu selected different individuals to establish different aspects of his preaching, different aspects of his mission. Like for distributing a holy name, he assigned Haridas Thakur and Nityananda. Haridas Thakur has been recognized as the Namacharya, Acharya of the holy name. Similarly, the Sambandha Tattva he established through Sanatana Goswami. And Rupa Goswami, through Rupa Goswami, he established the principle of Rasa. Therefore, Rupa Goswami is known as the Rasacharya, the Acharya of the Rasa. Rasa means, what rasa is that? This is bhakti rasa. Therefore, Rupa Goswami wrote Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And of the rasas, there are five principal rasas, five principal mellows, and seven secondary mellows. Those principal mellows are neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental, and confusion. And of these, what is the highest? The highest is the conjugal. And conjugal also has two aspects. One aspect of conjugal mellow is swakya, or in simple words, you can say that following the social norms. the relationship between man and woman, when it follows the social norms, then it is called swakya. And when it doesn't follow the social norms, then it is called paratya. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually came to establish Krishna's relationship with the gopis in Vrindavan in the paratya, which is the highest. And that aspect of Mahaprabhu's teaching has been presented by Rupa Goswami. He wrote some very, very exalted books on that. Like Prabhupada mentioned about Lalita Madhava and Vidarbha Madhava. So there are two dramas, and then there is Ujjala Nilamani. That is, this is considered to be the epitome of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, or Krishna's dealings with the devotees of Vrindavan. And so Rupa Goswami actually dealt with the most exalted aspects of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Here also we can remember Mahaprabhu appeared to fulfill two objectives. One objective is to give Krishna prema, Krishna consciousness, irrespective of any qualification and consideration. He just gave this most exalted, most elevated thing from the spiritual sky, the most precious object of the spiritual sky, he distributed without any discrimination. And that is why Mahaprabhu is known as Mahavadana. Namo Mahavadanaya, the most munificent appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is one aspect of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anarpita charim chirat karunaya avatirna karo. What he, Krishna, did not give in other ages. Generally he doesn't give that. Anarpita, which is not given. In order to distribute that, he appeared in the age of Kali as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the other aspect of Mahaprabhu's appearance is Sri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima Kidrisho Banai Vashadya Yenad Bhuta Madhurima Kidrisho Vam Modiya Shokhan Chasya Madhanu Bhavato Kidrisho Beti Lobhad. Lobh, you know, the word, expression lobh. Lobh means greed. Greed. So Krishna became greedy to understand three things. The glory of Radharani's love for him. Sri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima Kidrisha. What's the glory, the greatness of Radharani's love for me? How great is Radharani's love for me? And Shokhan Chasya Madhanu Bhavato. And another aspect is, by loving me, what kind of joy does she experience? And what is there, what kind of sweetness is there in me that she becomes so attracted towards me? So these are the three things that Krishna wanted to understand. And in order to understand that, Krishna had to assume the mood of Srimati Radharani. And that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, the distribution of Krishna prema is considered to be the external reason. But the internal reason for Mahaprabhu's appearance is to experience this love of Srimati Radharani for himself. Now that aspect has been very wonderfully described and systematically presented by Srila Rupa Goswami. Therefore, he is considered to be the Rasacharya. No one understood Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's internal mood as Sri Guru Goswami and Swarup Damodar Goswami. So now Rupa Goswami has presented the highest aspect of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. But at the beginning of that, Rupa Goswami presented the Upadeshamrita. Why? Because in order to reach there, in order to approach that, we have to become qualified. And here is the qualification. So jumping over Upadeshamrita, we cannot enter into Mahaprabhu's understanding of Mahaprabhu's pastimes. We cannot enter into Radha Krishna's intimate dealings in Vrindavan. Those who do that, they end up becoming deviant. Those who do that, those who skip over Upadeshamrita and try to enter into Radha Krishna's conjugal pastimes in Vrindavan, they end up becoming sahajiva. Therefore, and Prabhupada himself is establishing the point that without this book, we cannot actually become your devotees of the Lord. We cannot become Goswami. We cannot even control our senses. Therefore, it is so important. This book, Upadeshamrita, is so important for all of us. Although this book is generally meant for the neophytes, but at the same time we can see that this book will be needed, the guidance from this book will be needed at every step, at every stage of our spiritual development. We can see that from the very first verse. First verse goes like, do you all memorize the verses also in course of your is it a part of the same syllabus?
This particular one.
Okay.
And the next two also.
Okay, yeah. So best will be, since you are studying, might as well memorize all 11 verses. So the first one goes like, Bacho Begam Manasaha Krodha Begam Jyubha Begam Mudarupastha Begam Etan Began Yo Vishaheta Dhiraha Sarvam Apimam Prithivimsha Shishyat. Bachaha means of speech. Begam means urge. Beg, actually, the literal translation of the word will mean pressure. Or flow, beg. Anything that is moving, that movement is called beg, and mainly that the pressure generated from that movement. So it is actually a pressure, as if we are being forced to speak. It is an urge. This urge is uncontrollable in normal conditions. Generally, it is an urge which is very, very difficult to control. So these are the urges. The urge of bacha means of speech, manasaha of the mind, krodha of anger, vegam is urge, jubha of the tongue, vegam urge, Udara upastha of the belly and genitals. Udara means belly and upastha means genitals. So these are the urges or pressure. Ja, ya means whoever. Ja vishaheta can control. That means one who can control the these six urges. The urges of the speech, urge of the mind, urge of anger, urge of tongue, urge of belly and genital. So one who can control these six urges, one can who can tolerate these, they actually better expression is tolerate. Because they will be there, but we have to just tolerate. Like mosquitoes will bite, we have to tolerate. So we cannot actually control the affairs of this material nature. We are subjected to various kinds of pressures and urges, but we have to control. Don't you experience that? The mosquito is biting you and you get an urge. Slap it. Kill it. But then you stop. No, I shouldn't do that. So, sarvam api mam. Sarvam means all. Api means certainly. Imam means this. Prithi being means the world, sa, that personality, shishat, can make this life. So let us introduce, let us find out who the newcomer is now, or the latecomer. Okay, but no more. The punctuality, at least in classes, is very important. One thing I notice that the need of ISKCON devotees to be particular about time. We are not really very particular, we are not very strict. Like if the appointment is at 7 o'clock, we think it's all right if I go at 7:30. Sometimes people tell us that Maharaj, you can, the program will start at 7, but you can come at 8. And yes, time is of absolute importance. And okay, let me introduce, this is Vasudev Prabhu from France, an old friend of mine. Hare Krishna. So, translation, a sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger and the urges of the tongue, belly and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Now, isn't it a real tall order to begin with? The first verse is giving us, taking us to the highest platform. But this is meant for the neophytes. That's what Krishna consciousness is. At the very beginning, we become aware of what is our ultimate goal is. Actually, that's what impressed me about Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita so much. That I used to read Bhagavad Gita quite regularly of different authors, and I used to think also that I was understanding Bhagavad Gita quite well. But when I came across Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, it became absolutely clear to me that by reading other Bhagavad Gitas I didn't understand anything. Because when I would read one chapter, I would think that this is the highest. Then I'll go to the next chapter. Oh, Karma Yoga is the highest. And the next chapter, Karma Tyag is the highest. Sannyas is the highest. Ashtanga Yoga is the highest. But what did Prabhupada do? At the very beginning, Prabhupada pointed out, brought the last verse, last instruction of Krishna, as his first instruction. If you want to understand Bhagavad Gita, you have to surrender. Recognize that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto him. Krishna himself said, Sarva Dharma Pavitachi. So, In this way, we can understand what is our goal. And although we are beginning this particular topic, but right at the beginning, Rupa Goswami is giving us the ultimate standard. If you want to become a devotee of Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then this is the expected norm. This is the expectation. Control your tongue, control the urge to speak, control the urges of the mind, control the urge of anger, control the urges of the tongue, belly and genitals. And then Rupa Goswami is saying, Prithivim Shashishyat. The person who can do that, he can accept the entire earth planet as his disciple. Now it's actually interesting to note why he is bringing that point of, you know, making disciples, Prithivim Shashishyat, in this respect. Why Prithivim Shashishyat? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave an instruction to his followers. What is the instruction? If we want to become Mahaprabhu's followers, what do we have to do? Mahaprabhu is saying, yes? Right. Amar Agyai Guru Hoya Tarti Desh. Jare Dekho Tare Kaho Krishna. So Mahaprabhu's instruction is, whoever you see, you speak about Krishna. You instruct him about Krishna. Or instruct him about the instructions of Krishna. Or instruct him through the instructions of Krishna. Jare dekho, tare kahu, Krishna upadesh. And this way, amar agya, in my order, you become spiritual. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually telling all his followers, become spiritual masters. Now, that is how Mahaprabhu's mission will be accomplished. What is the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? At the beginning, I discussed about two aspects, two reasons of Mahaprabhu's coming. Twofold mission. The first is distribute Krishna consciousness. And Mahaprabhu went to the extent of even forecasting that this movement is going to spread in every town and village all over the world. How will it happen? How will this movement spread all over the world in every town and village? Through preaching. If we just sit tight, living in a temple, taking care of our own sadhana, very nice, but that's not everything. Actually, taking care of our own sadhana, taking care of our own spiritual life, is 50% of the mission. And what is the other 50%? The other 50% is to go out and preach. Achar and prachar. Yes, you practice. If you preach without practicing, then you'll be a hypocrite. That is not desirable. We have to practice, no doubt about that. Yes, we have to practice. But then, we have to preach. And it is due to our preaching that this movement is going to grow. Is the movement really growing? ISKCON is growing today the way we expect it to grow? Well, let's be frank, it is not growing. It's not growing. The way the movement was growing during Prabhupada's time, compared to that, ISKCON is stagnant. ISKCON is stagnating today. Why? Because the preaching is not going on. So, Mahaprabhu's instruction is go out and preach. Don't worry about how much you know. What to speak of when you know so much. You all have come here to do your Bhakti Shastri. After you complete the course, what are you going to do? Huh? Yes. You have to go out and preach. And that is what Mahaprabhu is instructing. And when you go out and preach, what role you are automatically assuming? I know you are a humble Vaishnava. You are becoming gurus. When you go out and preach, you are assuming the role of a guru. And that is the follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Rupa Goswami is emphatically pointing out at the very first verse that this is how you become a Vaishnava, this is how you become a Goswami, and this is how you become a spiritual master. And if you develop these qualities, then you can make the entire earth planet, entire world, as your disciple, Prithivim Shashishya. Now, in this respect, also Prabhupada made a very important point. Do we have to first become perfect and then go out and preach? No. Prabhupada is saying, as much as you know, just go out and distribute that. We don't have to become perfect. But in course of preaching, in course of distributing Krishna consciousness, we will become purified. So, Emmanuel, just a minute. I was just about to ask the question. I'll just wind up this round here, and then I'll take the question. So that is why Rupa Goswami at the very beginning, drawing the line from there, he is making this point that this is the standard. Control these urges. You want to become a Vaishnava, control the urges. To be a Vaishnava means what? Who is purely situated in his spiritual identity. What is holding us back from situating ourselves in our spiritual identity? A body consciousness. And these are the symptoms of body consciousness. The urge to speak. Not urge to speak, urge to speak nonsense. That's the point, Bhachavira. Urge of anger. Not just anger. Anger generated from the first frustration to achieve the sense gratification. That anger, body-related anger. Krishna conscious anger is fine. Hanuman is burning Lanka. Great act, grand act. Do you think Hanuman was feeling like a timid, humble, Trinadopisu Nichena Vaishnava? Hanuman was burning with rage. Arjun is fighting the battle in Kurukshetra. Does he look like a very humble Vaishnava? No. So anger is there. But this anger can be utilized in Krishna consciousness. And manusavega, we can't, the yogis generally think that to stop the activities of the mind is the objective of yoga. But that is not the objective of yoga. The objective of yoga is manmana bhavamana. The mind's activity is to think. We continue, but think about Krishna all the time. So I'll come to that, that how to control these six urges. Okay, Emmanuel.
Maharaj, I just read a conversation with Srila Prabhupada, one devotee, Ash Prabhupada. Tom Prabhupada, about his devotee, was not preaching in the mood of scriptures and the spiritual master. And Prabhupada said, and he said like that. Then he said that he gave an instruction. He said, do good to others, but first do good to yourself. And in the same conversation, Mahaprabhu didn't allow the neophyte devotees to actually go out and preach. And he said, for neophyte devotees, they should actually stay in the temple and worship the deity, or else, you know, the guy out and preacher can mislead others. So, can you please explain this?
Yeah. One should be in properly tuned up, tuned in. As you say, like, you know, the mood of our disciplic succession, teachings of Srila Prabhupada, we have to be in tune. And you see, Prabhupada, you know, said different things at different times, but we have to understand in what context Srila Prabhupada said that. And here we have to understand that the context is, if a person doesn't know anything, he cannot really open his mouth and speak. If he starts speaking, you know, he will actually become an embarrassment to a movement. So better let him stay in the temple and first get trained up. But if one has the right spirit, and even if he doesn't have the scholarship to support his preaching endeavor, still it's all right. An example I'll give. Prabhupada's secretary was Shyamasundara Prabhu, and he was traveling with his wife, Mother Malati, at the time, and their little daughter, Saraswati. Saraswati, I think, at that time only about 4 years old, 3 years old. And one day an important person, maybe a minister or someone, came to meet Srila Prabhupada in Delhi. And Prabhupada was, you know, while the minister was waiting for Srila Prabhupada, Saraswati, this little girl, was talking to this minister. And Saraswati asked, "Do you know Krishna?" And that man, in a joking way, he said, "No, I don't know Krishna." Then Saraswati said, "Oh, you don't know Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God." So when Prabhupada heard about that, Prabhupada said that this is preaching. This is Krishna consciousness. Even a three-year-old girl can preach to a big minister. You don't know Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Personality. So now tell me, can there be any limit to where you can start from? Like even a three-year-old girl can preach. But what really matters is the spirit of preaching. The conviction. You don't know Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. We may not know anything, but if we can at least know this much, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, let's go out and tell that to everyone. Right? Yes.
You said that the yogis, they call it yoga to stop the mind.
Stop the mind, yeah.
Patanjali's definition is yoga, chitta vritti nirodha, to the yoga means to block the functions of the mind, or
okay, you just said it. What does this particular word mean, sentence mean?
Yeah, I'm not asking you, is he wrong or is it, do we have a Krishna conscious understanding of
The chitta vritti nirodha, yoga chitta vritti nirodha is the first aphorism of Bhagavata, which means the purpose of yoga is to stop the activity of the mind. Chitta means the mind, vritti means the waves. What are the waves? Thought waves. So to stop that. Now, that is again, you know, half of the yoga. You stop the bad waves, but that, is that the goal? Stop the disease. Just to stop the disease is the goal of health? No. Then you start acting in a healthy way. When you become healthy, you act in a positive way. But as long as you are sick, lie in bed and get rid of the disease. Right? So yoga is that, you know, like as long as you are diseased with your materialistic influence, stop that material influence. And then comes when that undesirable thoughts have been stopped, then you know, Krishna consciousness will be introduced. So that is the general trend, you see, like step by step you are going up, right? But Krishna consciousness, the uniqueness of Krishna consciousness is that at the time of emergency, a crash course has been given. Right. And the crash course is you don't have to endeavor for citta vritti nirodha. Just inject your mind with Krishna consciousness and those thoughts will automatically disappear. Right? So that's why Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga, bhakti is the ultimate yoga system. Alright? Thank you. Yes, sorry, Prabhu.
You quoted that shloka about everyone. Lord Chaitanya is like instructing everyone to become a guru. What about in the Sikshashtaka? He says that no desire to the dhanam, the sundara. I have no desire to become wealth, nor do I. What do you think? I don't want followers.
You see, like, followers is one. It's not that to be guru means to collect followers. Right? It may seem that way, because you know you have so many people following you. But a mood of a follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that I do not want anything for myself, but for their sake, I'm just giving it to them. So that should be the mood of the spiritual master. That for benefiting them, let us distribute Krishna consciousness. It's not that, like I will have so many followers. And so many followers multiplied by so many dollars. so much guru dakshin. No. You know, for their benefit that we should give it to them, not for our personal interest. And their following, like and a wonderful example is Rishabdev. You know, a person completely oblivious of his surroundings, doesn't have any awareness at all. He is so unconcerned about himself that he is not even wearing any clothes, right? Naked he is moving about. But thousands of people are following him. So much so that the king, Arhat, from Konka and Venka, you know, he started to wonder that I am a king and I do not command that kind of influence over people. But look at this guy. So maybe that is the way. So if I start acting like him, then I'll have a lot of followers. And what the result was? Result was Jainism. That imitation follower of Rishabdev, King Arhat, you know, generated this new cult, Jains. And what do they do? Move about naked, don't eat, don't shave, and so forth. But what is the ultimate objective? Ultimate objective is dhanam janam. When it is dhanam and janam, the sundaris cannot be far away. So one will attract the other, lead to the other. Yes?
Maharaj, in Bhagavad Gita, I think the shloka that Chupram Bhavati Dhamma Ma Shashwat Chantin Migachati, that in the purport by, I think, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that it may even be the case that a sincere devotee, the worst case scenario is that for his whole life he cannot actually be a acharya. He may do some abominable activities, even for the rest of his life, he cannot help it. But one would think the bhakti process is so powerful that anyone who sincerely takes to it could get cured within that lifetime of whatever bad habits he has.
You see, ultimately, we all have to be honest with ourselves. Honest with ourselves means, yes, in the material nature we have accumulated so much dirt. We have so many bad habits. Now those bad habits may not go away overnight. But if we follow the process, If I practice the process sincerely, it will work. Mm. So, you know, we may become Vaishnavas, but we may still have, you know, certain dirt in our hearts, which may become manifest at times, right? And that's why the instruction is that, that don't judge a Vaishnav for his, by his mistakes. If there is some mistakes, understand that he's following the process, he'll become purified in course of time. But the trouble actually starts, like as we have seen in ISKCON. You see, when after Srila Prabhupada left, the devotees, you know, in the leading position, especially those who became gurus, they actually, they began to, I mean naturally rather, they thought that to be guru means to act like Srila Prabhupada, because that's the only guru they saw, right? And they started to act like Srila Prabhupada, and the society also started to go along with that, you know. Now Prabhupada is not here, so these individuals who are gurus, they have become as good as Srila Prabhupada. So they assumed a very lofty position. And then, you know, certain, you know, qualifications started to become manifest in some individuals. And naturally, the reaction was very heavy. Like, you assume the position as good as Srila Prabhupada, and now we can see that you are nowhere near that, you know. So the tendency was to drag them down. And so my point actually is that let us not artificially pretend to be what we are not. If we are a person full of many defects, let us recognize that and take a humble position. Right? Say for example, you know, if I come and start broadcasting, I'm a pure devotee, and you all start treating me as a pure devotee, then one day you find out that after all I'm not that pure. What will be the natural reaction?
Maybe rejection of you.
Right, exactly. That's why the safest course to take is take a humble position. If I am not that pure, let me admit that, well, I am not that pure. But, you know, my only qualification is that I am in ISKCON. My only qualification is that I have been exposed to Srila Prabhupada's teachings. My only qualification is that I am able to follow Srila Prabhupada's instruction. Therefore let me hold on to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. Prabhupada is a pure devotee. And if I hold on to Srila Prabhupada, then maybe someday I'll also become a pure devotee. So that's why the safest course is to take a humble position. Then no one will, you know, no one will become upset about you. You will not be, the point that I'm trying to make is, somebody may be very senior devotee, and he may have some difficulty. But if he is in a humble position, no one gets upset about it. But if somebody assumes a very big position, and then he starts to display these weaknesses, then the trouble starts. So, you see, in ISKCON we must, you know, individually we must try to cultivate this mood. And collectively, we also should be, then it will be easier for us to tolerate the defects, if at all there are, in other devotees. Yes, let us face the reality, you know, like, I mean, we joined the movement so many years ago. Prior to that, at least I know, what I was. So let us just deal with that. You know? Like, because I have come to Krishna consciousness, I'm getting an opportunity to become purified. So let me get purified. Not the thing that, you know, well, I joined ISKCON, therefore now I'm a pure devotee. Rather, a pure devotee will always maintain a humble attitude. Pure devotee always, even Prabhupada. You know what Prabhupada sometimes used to say? He said that, I pray to Krishna that I don't fall down. You know, in his late 70s, all his life he had been a pure devotee. I mean, who will ever question Prabhupada's purity? But that is the mood of a pure devotee. You know, like he never thinks that now I'm perfect. Rather, he feels that the more he makes advancement, the more he feels that my only hope is the shelter of my spiritual master, the Lord's feet, and prayer to Krishna that I don't fall down. Anyway, I mean, does it make your point clear?
I can ask one question. What would you, to me, having a humble position is, like you expressed, a humble attitude, but also externally, how would that, what's been an example of how humble position would be?
Okay, instead of saying that now I'm a guru, I'm a pure devotee, I'm a big, let's maintain the thing that my qualification is that I'm just a humble servant of Srila Prabhupada. Whatever I'm doing is because of my connection to Srila Prabhupada. And let me just hold on to that connection and let me try to enrich that kind of connection. Mm-hmm. Instead of thinking that I have become so big now that I do not need Srila Prabhupada anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm safe because I'm in ISKCON. And as long as I'm in ISKCON, I will be safe because all the devotees will give me protection. If I think that now I've become so big that I don't need the shelter of ISKCON, okay, I'm inviting trouble. Yes? Hari Har Prabhu.
We have understood that Prabhupada actually fought hard in this India. He went to America and made a lot of devotees. And at the time we were all anxious to follow. You are now telling us that we are going down. Can you explain?
What's that? I couldn't get that last.
I said, Prabhupada has tried and then he has come up with so many devotees in the West and everywhere. And we all have hope and we are progressing.
Yeah.
But to hear from you that ISKCON is going down, I want you to explain.
Not
that.
Going down. I said ISKCON is stagnating. I mean, compared to what ISKCON used to be. Yeah. Yeah. You know, like when Prabhupada was here, at least, you know, where ISKCON was established, we had hundreds of devotees. Right? Hundreds. In the temples. Yeah. In the temples. And, like, for example, those days if you came to ISKCON temple, wherever it is, you know, like whether it's in America or Europe or India, you would see all Western devotees, I mean, non-Indian devotees. And now you go to the temples, you see mostly Indian devotees. What does it mean? Maybe the number has increased, but, you know, seeing Indian devotees, you know, manning all the temples, right? What does it actually mean? The local people are not joining. Indians are being attracted because it is, you know, it's their thing. They are attracted. They are joining in spite of our lack of preaching. Right? Preaching means, you know, like preach. Like Prabhupada, when he was in Nairobi, the devotees brought some important Indians to meet Srila Prabhupada in the evening. Then after the meeting was over, they left. Prabhupada asked all the devotees and he said, did I come to Africa to meet the Indians? He said, where are the Africans? You are in Africa. Where are the Africans? And then the next day the devotees went out and they brought lots of Africans and Prabhupada was pleased. I mean, some preaching is going on, no doubt about that. But this is not the kind of preaching that is going to turn the whole world Krishna conscious. In order to make the whole world Krishna conscious, our preaching has to be a lot more dynamic. Yes. Okay. Then I'll take your question.
There seems to be like somewhere in our consciousness in ISKCON, maybe from the past, from like our passionate misconception that to become a preacher, to become like a famous celebrity star. What is the right conception?
Look at the preachers during Prabhupada's time. So sorry, Prabhu was telling me the first time that I met a devotee in 1970 in Germany. You know, actually in German universities there's a thing called Mensa. It's like the university canteen. And I used to spend most of my time there. So I just came out of the Mensa. And there I saw this Western individual shaved up, wearing dhoti and kurta. And kurta, dhoti that they're wearing, it's not really looking like dhoti, you know. And they were so shabbily dressed, in simple words. But I was so excited to see them, you know, like, I mean, I was missing India already, and to see them, you know, dressed up like in that way. I didn't know what the Hare Krishna movement was at that time. There was early stage. And I went and I spoke to them. And every one of them, you know, was trying to sell something, give me something, you know, a book. The only thing that they had in English was the Back to Godhead. So I just took that. And everyone was inviting me. I mean, that group was excited that, you know, I came, being attracted by them. Now, you are in Mayapur, you're spending a lot of time in Mayapur. There are thousands of people who are coming. How many of us go out of our way to speak to them? So, it's not that to preach we have to become, you know, passionate like a bull. In order to preach, we simply have to develop the compassion and the understanding of the importance of this movement. Tell me, what's the condition of the world today? Do you think this world has much hope? And do you think this world has much time? Now what can save this world from this total disaster? Krishna consciousness movement. Now what are we going to do? So that is what we have to try to do. Preach with the right spirit. And what is the substance, what is the essence of preaching? What motivates us to preach? Compassion. I'll take this question. Yeah.
Maharaj, there is one sentence in your character. Vama promotes himself to the platform of goodness, sattva guna, by following the instruction of Rupa Goswami, and then everything concerning how to make further progress will be reduced. Give him more.
Yeah. You see, Srimad Bhagavatam actually explains that point. Tada rajas tamo bhava kamo lobho dayaschaje cheta etair anabiddham sthitam satya prasidate. The influence of the mode of passion and ignorance simply generates lust, greed, anger, etc. We cannot practice Krishna consciousness until and unless we come to the platform of goodness. Sthitam satte prashivati. When one comes to the platform of goodness, then only he becomes eligible or capable of practicing Krishna consciousness. Not otherwise. In a mode of passion and ignorance, you cannot practice devotion. So just to begin our devotional service, we have to come to the mode of goodness. And that mode of goodness is signified by surrender. So the surrender, and then after that, everything will automatically take place. Because devotional practice of devotional service will generate the natural, it'll blossom into its qualities, displaying its qualities. You practice devotional service, automatically the good qualities will become manifest in you. Jashasti bhakti bhagavat takinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate sura. One who has developed devotional service, one who has developed devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, automatically the divine qualities of the demigods will become manifest in him. So that's why you just start devotional service and the rest will automatically happen.
So we can make spiritual progress to extent to which extent we are in mode of goodness, but we have to come to mode of goodness.
Yeah, you start with mode of goodness. It's not a matter of degree of goodness. You start with the mode of goodness. The devotional service will take you beyond the mode of material goodness and take you to the spiritual goodness. So it is not that, you know, to the extent we become influenced by the mode of goodness, to that extent we become a devotee. It's not that. The point is that as you make advancement, yes, the influence of the mode of goodness will become manifest, but it will take you beyond the mode of goodness to the transcendental goodness. And again, I'll go back to that point, that goodness is surrender. As long as you're in the mode of passion and ignorance, you won't be able to surrender. So in order to surrender, which is the beginning of Krishna consciousness, beginning of devotional service, you have to be in the mode of goodness.
And when it is mixed?
Mode of goodness. Mixed means?
With other goodness.
Anyway, why don't you just surrender and then see what happens?
I don't want to like discourage nobody. Prabhupada said in one lecture that a woman cannot come actually to God's form of goodness.
As I say, like sometimes Prabhupada says something, but you have to understand in what context Prabhupada said that. Did Prabhupada not include the women in Krishna consciousness?
So many.
Rather, Prabhupada also said that for a woman it is easy to surrender. Because they're by nature they're submissive. And by nature they're submissive means, you know, that is goodness. That is, you know, try to understand this point. Unless one is in the mode of goodness, can he surrender? As long as one is in the mode of passion, forget about the ignorance. In ignorance, they don't know what they're doing, whether they're awake or asleep. Right? Or even when they're awake, they're asleep. That's ignorance. But when one is in the mode of passion, he cannot surrender. To surrender, you have to come to the mode of goodness. And then when you surrender, then who is acting? Krishna is acting through his agent, spiritual master, Vaishnava. And they will take you. I'll take his question. He didn't ask any question. Then I'll take you.
So, is it just surrender before? So, what should I do now? Just come to the mode of goodness and surrender? Or?
Yeah, you have surrendered. Now, what does surrender mean? Surrender means then you are not deciding for yourself. Right? You are letting your spiritual master and your authorities to decide for you what you should do. Right? Now tell me, is it a mode of goodness or passion? Yeah. So then, actually, that is not only goodness. When you are surrendering to a Vaishnava, and following his instructions, you're already in transcendental goodness. Your goodness. That's devotional service.
Even if I'm still the modes, I try to carry out.
Don't worry about the modes. Because when you surrender, then and you're acting according to the instruction, then you're already transcendental to the modes. For example, Arjuna is fighting the battle. In which mode he is fighting the battle?
Passion.
Passion. But Arjuna is fighting the battle, why?
Krishna told him.
Because Krishna told him. So surrender to Krishna is making him act apparently in the mode of passion. But is it mode of passion? Huh? No, it's transcendental. So for Krishna, and due to Krishna's instructions or Krishna's devotee's instructions, is actually transcendental. Yes, Manu?
Maharaj, you mentioned that one should develop compassion and then one will be able to preach. Sometimes I reflect the precarious situation of the material world. Even I reflect on my own past. All the tribulations I've been through. And so just in order just to, come to a conclusion that this material world, that there's no hope at all. But nonetheless, after going through this process, I just find that even though, there's no compassion that actually developed, it's not something that is natural that's coming from your heart.
Yeah, so that's true. You see, compassion, the state of compassion for preaching, is a kind of sort of an advanced stage of preaching. Like initial stage of preaching, what you are doing, you are acting according to the instruction of your authority. Authority said, go out and preach. Whether you have the compassion or not, but because your authority has told you, you're going out and preach. And also we see, one is not pushed into direct preaching straight away. Like authorities are sending them out distributing books. You don't realize that you're actually preaching. But you apparently are distributing books, but that is doing the preaching. When the books go out and they read, they are preached to. Yes, who had a question here in this area?
On that previous point. Until you reach the neophyte devotees, they haven't fully surrendered, does that mean they aren't eligible for practicing devotion service? You said
a boy is in primary school. Does it mean that he is not qualified to study? He's at a lower grade, but he's practicing. That will automatically bring him to the higher grade. So he is not directly involved in preaching, but he is acting according to the instruction. And by doing that, he will come to the platform. And also, if he just distributes books and doesn't read the books, then it will not work. Prabhupada also made a point that don't think that I am writing these books for you all to sell. I am writing this book for you all to read. First you read and then you go out and give it out. So the process will bring us to the platform of advanced stage. Alright? Okay, so let me just read a little bit more of the thing. This is a long purport. So we'll just read a little one page of the purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam 6, 1, 9 and 10, Parikshit Maharaj placed a number of intelligent questions before Sukadeva Goswami. One of these questions was, why do people undergo atonement if they cannot control their senses? For instance, a thief may know perfectly well that he may be arrested for his stealing, and he may actually even see a thief arrested by the police. Yet he continues to steal. Experience is gathered by hearing and seeing. One who is less intelligent gathers experience by seeing. One who is more intelligent gathers experience by hearing. When an intelligent person hears from the law books and shastras or scriptures that stealing is not good and hears that a thief is punished when arrested, he refrains from theft. A less intelligent person may first have to be arrested and punished for stealing to learn to stop stealing. However, a rascal, a foolish man, may have the experience of both hearing and seeing and may even be punished, but still he continues to steal. Even if such a person atones and is punished by the government, he will again commit theft as soon as he comes out of jail. If punishment in jail is considered atonement, what is the benefit of such atonement? Thus Parikshit Maharaj inquired, Drishta Shrutabhyam Jat Papam Jatan Napi Atmano Hitam Karoti Bhuya Vivasha Prayashchittam Atho Katham Kachin Nivartate Abhu Abhadrat Kachin Nivartate Bhadrat Kochi Charati Tat Punaha Prayashchittam Atho Partham Manne Kunjara Shauchabat. He compares atonement to an elephant bathing. The elephant may take a very nice bath in the river, but as soon as it comes out onto the bank, it throws dirt all over its body. What then is the value of its bathing? Similarly, many spiritual practitioners chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and at the same time commit many forbidden things, thinking that their chanting will counteract their offenses. Of the 10 types of offenses one can commit while chanting the holy name of the Lord, this offense is called namnobala jashrahi papu buddhi. Committing sinful activities on the strength of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Similarly, certain Christians go to the church to confess their sins, thinking that confessing their sins before a priest and performing some penance will relieve them from the results of their weekly sins. As soon as Saturday is over, Sunday comes, they again begin their sinful activities, expecting to be forgiven the next Saturday. This kind of prayashchitta or atonement is condemned by Parikshit Maharaj. The most intelligent king of this time, Sukadev Goswami, equally intelligent as befitting the spiritual master of Maharaj Parikshit, answered the king and confirmed that his statement concerning atonement was correct. A sinful activity cannot be counteracted by the pious activity. Thus, real prayashchitta, atonement, is the awakening of a dormant Krishna consciousness. So, we will actually see that this controlling of the six urges will be possible only through Krishna, becoming Krishna conscious, not by any other means. Putting a clamp on your tongue, you won't be able to control your tongue. Or sitting in the mountain cave, practicing Ashtanga Yoga, you won't be able to control your mind. Trying to become Trinadopi Sunichena, you won't be able to control your anger. The answer to all these is Krishna. That is what Rupa Goswami will point out. So, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.